This is Kara Vandery of the Ashland City Library. It is May 11th, 2023, and we will be interviewing Jerry Baker. The interview is being done by the Ashland City Library through Humanities Kansas in conjunction with the National Endowment for the Arts Big Read Project, which is provided through Arts Midwest. And Jerry, I know you served in the Vietnam War. What branch of service were you in?
U.S. Navy.
What was your rank when you left?
E6 or E5. I mean, I had passed the test for E6, but I wouldn't. I would have had to extend to sew it on. So, but it was E5, petty officer, second class.
Okay. Where did you serve?
Well, our squadron was based at North Island Naval Air Station in San Diego. But we were attached to the USS Yorktown that was based in Long Beach. But we left when we left the States. On the first cruise in late 64, they had told us that they didn't have any money to operate on, so we were going to just go from port to port to port and see just about everything in the Far East and Australia and all that stuff. And then we always stop at Hawaii to do qualification cruises. We were anti-submarine warfare was our basic job. And so we stopped in Pearl Harbor and then did the qual cruise and then back to Pearl Harbor. And then we went to Yokosuka and Japan, and then around to Sasebo, Japan. Spent Christmas in Sasebo, and then we went down to. We stopped for a couple of days at White Beach, Okinawa, and then went to Hong Kong. Spent a week, I think, in Hong Kong. We were just leaving Hong Kong to go to Manila when they started bombing North Vietnam. So they pulled us off station and we spent like 120 days out at sea the first time because they had our airplanes. We were, like I say, we were anti-submarine warfare was our job, was our mission, but they put us to watching the boat traffic coming in and out of the rivers from the Mekong Delta clear down to, or from clear up to the demilitarized zone. And we had two squadrons, 10 planes in each squadron, and we had two of them in the air all 24/7 for that 100 and some days that They didn't have anybody to replace us with, so then they finally got, I think the patrol squadrons from over in the Philippines went ahead and came over and started doing the same job, so we could go on to do. We did a CETO, that's Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. It consists of U.S. and the English and Australians and New Zealanders, and we went out and did a kind of a mock contest with them hunting submarines, and then went back to a Yankee station there at Vietnam, and flew another 90 days or so. And then they pulled us off station. We came back to San Diego and stopped at Honolulu on the way back. And then six six or so months later, we came back for a second tour. And then they had the patrol squadrons taking care of the South Vietnamese rivers, and they took us. They started us flying from the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone, up to as far as Haiphong Harbor, up in between Red China, Hainan Island, and North Vietnam, and was. No, fairly uneventful. We didn't really do much except watch traffic, and occasionally one of the pilots would eject out over the ocean if they were hit in some of the bombing raids. And we were fixed wing planes, so we couldn't land in the water, but we could fly around and keep the North Vietnamese. Military or government or whatever would pay the citizens the equivalent of a lifetime's wages to if they could pick up one of those pilots and bring him in, so when one was in the water, there were lots of sampans and stuff out there. The whole family lives on this sampan, about 25 feet long or something like that, and we had to just kind of fake them out. We didn't shoot at any of them, but we kind of flew around. And you'd be surprised intimidating it is to fly about 15 feet off the water and open the bomb bays on the plane. It tends to get their attention. We weren't really in combat. We were getting combat pay because we were in the area, but we didn't really. That cruise, we didn't have to do the 90 or 100 day at sea things because they had other people to spell us. We did. We had a couple of more CETO exercises, and we went. At one time, we went around to Bangkok. The aircraft carrier was needed to deep water, so we launched. We just went ahead and they anchored out probably 20 or 30 miles on south of Bangkok, and then had buses running up to Bangkok from the ship. And about five of us just went over and got a cab. And he said, "Where do you want to go?" And I said, "Wherever they're not going." So we went down to, there was a little army R&R deal down the coast, and we spent about three or four days there. We did go the CETO. Cruise or the CETO exercise that we were talking about was based in Manila, and we had our aircraft carrier and all of the kind of the ships that go with the aircraft carrier, a Limey English aircraft carrier, and an Australian aircraft carrier, and a New Zealand aircraft carriers all in Manila at the same time, and everybody had to anchor out. There wasn't enough, Manila wasn't anywhere near prepared for that many people. They hadn't seen that many Americans or anybody else since World War II, and in one other deal, we I anchored out off of Cebu Island down in the Philippines, and then had to take a Liberty boat into the pier, and then the town was about 15 or 20 miles away. So I ran back and forth with the cabs, and that was the first time Cebu had seen any Americans since World War II as well. So we were, yeah.
Going back to when you first joined the service, were you drafted or did you enlist?
Enlisted.
Why?
Because I wanted the training, and I got really good electronic training as a matter of fact, I spent just about as much time in school as I did on active duty. The electronics training was down at Memphis, Navy Memphis, at Millington, Tennessee. And I think that was six, seven months, I think, and then another 3 months to get the training on the anti-submarine equipment that we were going to. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to San Diego, and I had training the squadron had gotten all brand new planes right before I got there. There were the S2 Echo, the gear was, and I guess you'd call it an analog computer that had a screen between the pilot and co-pilot that had a little arrow that floated around in there to signify the airplane, and then we could, when we were in an ASW exercise, we could when we dropped buoys, they'd mark that on that screen, and we knew where we drop listening buoys first, and no pinging or anything, so that we could just listen to the water for a while, and we could set the depth of the microphone at whatever level we wanted to, and that we'd drop the buoys around, and if we found the sound print of a submarine or per surface ship, as far as that's concerned. But we could go ahead and start dropping pinging buoys that would localize and find the ship submarine. And
what dates are we talking? When did you join?
April of 63.
Where were you living before you joined? Were you still
here,
at home?
Here in Ashland. Yeah.
With your parents?
Yeah.
Who were your parents?
Errol and Rachel Baker.
Okay.
Mom was an RN and spent, I think she finally gave up her nursing license when she was 81 or two.
Why did you join the Navy? Couldn't you get electronics in another division?
Oh, probably could have, yeah. But my brother was already in the Navy. He was he went in as an enlisted man, and then he got into the NAVCAD program, Naval Aviation Cadets, and got flight training that way, and then became an ensign when he got out of flight training. I passed all the tests and everything to get that same thing, but then I flunked the physical. My sinuses are always kind of plugged up, and if I'd have known that was that bad a deal, I just wouldn't have told anybody about it. But anyway, I
You couldn't get into that, so no. You chose electronics.
Yeah, well, that was actually when I joined, the only thing that I could really, I really enjoyed very much in school was drafting. And so I told them I wanted to be a draftsman, and they said, oh, yeah, you can do that. And then when I got into boot camp, the first, the counselor that we talked to there, I told him I wanted to be a draftsman, and he said, no, you don't. And I said, well, yeah, that's why I joined. And he said, well, in the first place, it's a school that's got a 4 or 5 year backlog of people to get into, because they don't replace there aren't that many draftsmen in the, it's a CB rate, CBs are the construction people in the Navy, so he said, here's what you want, this AX is just, it's a new rate that just opened up, and you won't have any trouble getting, advancing in it or whatever, and you'll get electronics training in the meantime. And says, well, yeah, fine. And the rest and here is you history. Are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, do you recall the first days in a service? What was boot camp like, besides fibbing to you?
Oh, I mostly standing at attention, but the first 2 weeks we were out, they called it Camp Nimitz. It's right out on the sand, the sand dunes that run over to the Marine Corps recruit depot too, and that's where they run the Marines in the soft sand, all day. We did a lot of marching in it too, but we didn't have to get out, try to run in soft sand, but then mostly it was just getting up at 3:30 in the morning and standing at attention for 3 hours waiting for breakfast, and basically it was just everything in your locker had to be clean all the time. So you get in at night and take the clothes that you're wearing and wash them by hand and take them out and put them. We put everything on the clothesline and tied square knots in the thing and all that stuff.
And, no clothes pins? No clothes pins?
No, we use little pieces of twine, of rope. Yeah, this is the Navy, But anyway, a lot of times it'd be 10:30 or 11 o'clock by the time we finished up everything and got ready to go to bed. And it's San Diego's cold at night. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. The temperature of the ocean pretty much, commands the sea breeze comes in off the ocean all day, we had a couple of guys get pneumonia in boot camp, but George Vandeveer and I went in at the same time, and he did get pneumonia. For about a week, it was out of, we still graduated together.
Do you remember any of your instructors?
Oh, our company commander was an engineman chief. And he was a pretty good guy. I don't remember his name, but the rest of them were kind of come and go. Camp Nimitz was the first 2 weeks over there. That was that we had real drill instructors and then when we got back over. Well. I guess right after we moved back over to the regular naval station, a guy from Nebraska went home and died I forget the name of the disease, but anyway, they decided he must have gotten it in boot camp. So they really cut down, instead of having people sleeping on the top and bottom bunks, where they have one guy on top here and another bottom here. They also quit getting us up at 2:30 or 3 in the morning, they lightened up a little bit on us, I guess, is the way.
So a few things improved.
Yeah, yeah. But really, I was taking tests for that NAVCAD program so much that I missed most of the training. I was off taking. I passed a college level GED and I've always been good at taking multiple choice tests.
Okay, so you went to boot camp in San Diego. Where did you go next?
Straight down to Memphis, Millington, Tennessee, to advanced training and that kind of stuff. I think I was in Millington. I'm going to say probably 9 months. I don't know. I'd been in almost a year when I finished when I got back to the squadron in San Diego and I had training on that new analog system, but it took inputs from the altitude and the compass and all of the anti-submarine gear was all tied to it, and nobody in the squadron had any idea how to set up the phasing on all this stuff. So a first class and I spent about three months over in the tech shop for the carrier group. They let us have the whole shop from midnight till 6 in the morning, so that we could use whatever equipment, and we figured out a way to get the phasing all right on all this stuff, so that they could talk to each other and talk everybody or all of the units could talk to the main computer.
When did you sleep?
Oh, daytime. We were.
Okay. So you had a year of training before you were assigned?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, what was your first assignment?
The squadron next door to that training squadron was VS-25 was the squadron that I was in. Normally, when a new airman comes into a squadron, he'd wind up out pushing, washing airplanes for the first 6 months or so. But since I had that training on that equipment, they needed me in the shop, so I got right in the tech shop, all the way. Nick, somebody, and I were the only two that were trained in the squadron, and we kind of switched off on being air crew and flying with it, or working in the shop there on the electronics lab there on the ship. He didn't like to fly that much, and I did, so I wound up. I think I had about 200 carrier landings in the 2 years. We flew several times a week.
So you received a lot of training.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, they uh, I basically got out because of the way they treat people on the ship. The chiefs and the officers are the only ones that can even speak up and say anything. Everybody else are second class citizens, or hopefully they've changed a lot of that by now, but I don't know. Hated living on the ship. In fact, I told them I would probably reenlist if they'd put me in the patrol squadrons that were all based on land. And, you can't do that. You can't change your MOS. And,
But you had a 2-year enlistment then?
4 years.
Four.
I probably was in training, about as much as I was actually doing anything. But anyway, I've used the electronics training to make a living ever since. So
You did not see combat personally then?
No.
Okay.
No, we, every once in a while when we were doing the north or the south, every once in a while we'd find a bullet hole in the airplane, the sampan people would all wave at you like this when you're on your way, and then they'd probably take a shot at you. I suppose it could have been a lot worse, but it wasn't. Yeah.
Were you awarded any medals or citations?
Just the good conduct and the Vietnam Expeditionary Medal, and there was one that the Vietnamese, South Vietnamese gave us a medal of some kind. I don't remember what the but no, I didn't have any.
When you were on the ship, how did you stay in touch with your family?
All letters is about all you could do. We didn't have any way of calling. Nowadays they're all on the internet,
What was the food like on the ship?
Oh, it was not bad. It was, the first cruise, when they pulled us off of this supposedly going from port to port and put us into flying 24/7, the ship just about ran out of stuff because they weren't used to feeding people 24/7. In fact, in the first cruise, the ship had breakfast, dinner, and supper, and they didn't And those of us who were taken off, our shop worked 24 hours a day anyway. We had people working both shifts, and there wasn't any place to eat except go down and they'd make you a little lunch box. Before the first cruise was over, one of the cooks decided that he'd open a taco line down there and start making tacos. They had all the stuff to do that, and they'd only let you have one taco at a time, so people would just get back in line and eat the taco while they were. The second cruise, they were set up a little more for it. They knew that we were going to be out at sea a lot, and they.
What kind of things caused you stress? Did you feel any pressure when you were there to perform?
Oh, well, yeah, of course. Anybody that has any responsibility feels a little bit, you know, but I don't, you know.
Just the pressure of not having any say on how your life was conducted?
Oh, very little now. Yeah, you pretty much do whatever you're told, but, you know.
Is that not true across the board with the services, or do you think it was worse on boat?
No, I think it's about the same in all of them, I think. It was then. Now they've relaxed that quite a lot, I think. But
how did people entertain themselves on a ship?
Go out to sit out on the fantail behind and watch the sharks go after the stuff. I don't know. They were. I know they had a ship's library. I probably read every book in the library. One time, you know, I don't know, just a lot of them played cards. Yeah.
Did you ever get to go on leave?
Oh yeah, I took a week in Tokyo, when we were at Yokosuka. Maybe it was 3 or 4 days. I don't remember. About five of us went up to Tokyo and rented a hotel, a couple of hotel rooms, and the Japanese students were just all over us about asking questions and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we had to wear uniform all the time, of course, but they didn't let the officers wear uniforms off the ship. They had to change to civvies it was Japan and not that long ago, not that long after World War II, you know. Oh. So I guess that's the reason, I don't know.
Was there anything that happened that you thought was funny when you were in the service?
Oh, I suppose, yeah. I can't point at any one thing, but they...
Okay. If you have any pictures of yourself or things that you took, I would really love to share them.
Okay.
Well, I'll just copy them if you find them.
I'll see what I've got at home. And, Jennifer can send you that one that she had in that Facebook post.
Did you have any officers or fellow soldiers that you became good friends with?
Yeah, I've got two or three that when we were back in the States between cruises, I didn't have enough rank in the first turnaround, but then when I came back, I was second class petty officer, and then we could go live off base, so. About five or six of us had rented about a 3-bedroom house or something like that, and live off the base.
Did that improve things to have a little privacy?
Oh yeah, well yeah, of course. Yeah. Leaving on the barracks out at the Naval Air Station there. Well, there's no privacy in the barracks either.
Did you keep a diary?
No, I don't. I don't remember doing any.
So, very shortly, tell me what your assignment was on the ship. You said you did electronics, but then you were also getting to fly planes.
Well, we were working on our own planes. Our tech shop. Was responsible for all the electronics in the plane, and you know, there was always something.
What type of planes were you flying?
S2. It's a Grumman airframe that was also used as the carrier onboard delivery plane was that same airframe, and and they had one with the radome up on top that was an early warning version of that same airframe. But Grumman made a lot of them, or so I think. You know, I don't know if they're still making it, but they were.
So you were flying a fixed wing. And what was the purpose of this plane? Was it a bomber? Was it?
Well, anti-submarine warfare was the was the mission. Yeah.
What do you call the armament? What do you call what you dropped?
Oh, sonobuoys, and we in real wartime we could have dropped depth charges. We had practiced depth charges so that when we were in a if we had our own submarines that we were looking at, or the even if it was English or New Zealand or whatever, there were always judges on board the ship, on board the submarine, so that when you finally get dropped two PDCs right at once, and if they were close enough that they would have been damaged to the ship, then they consider that a, you know, and then you surface the ship. And
what is a PDC?
Oh, practice depth charge.
Practice depth charge.
Yeah, it's just more or less like an M80 or some kind of a loud firecracker, but
So that part was fun.
Yeah.
It was playing cat and mouse.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. It was fun.
But the North Vietnamese did not have submarines.
No, no, they didn't. But Russia did, and China did.
So you had a real purpose for being there.
Yeah, we'd drop a buoy in the water just about, sonobuoys come in. There are three different versions. One of them is just a listening unit. It doesn't do any. It doesn't make any noise. Doesn't do anything. And then the pinging buoy actually sends out a ping, and you can drop two of them a ways apart.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Drop two of them a ways apart and triangulate, the echoes, or three especially. You can triangulate those echoes. That's what this AN-730 screen that I was talking about. That's what basically what it did was look at the we'd get a ping from a return from a ping, and you could triangulate that, kind of like the way they watch they can triangulate your cell phone wherever you're at too, same principle, I guess, except it was sound instead of
Okay, so there really is no privacy.
Yeah.
Do you remember what was the day like when you left the military, when you left the Navy?
Oh, well, I got out 2 months early to get enrolled at Wichita State because they were just getting ready to go on another cruise. Mm-hmm. And I think they didn't argue about giving me an early out because they would have had to fly me back from the Far East to somewhere, if I hadn't gotten that. But anyway,
So you went to Wichita State.
Yeah.
What were you on the GI Bill?
I just took about about 12 hours, but then I went to work at Beach Aircraft, and started out doing night classes and working days at Beach, and then the Beach switched me to second shift, and I not all of my classes I could switch to a daytime one, but I tested out of a couple of them. So I got, you know, but. Yeah.
What were you doing at Boeing? What were you doing?
Beach. John Swayze has pictures of a plane that he was on that was a twin engine. That plane was a cross between the Queen Air and the King Air. The military wanted the fuselage size of the Queen Air, but they wanted the all of the electronics and the turboprops and stuff from the King. So we were trying to make the wiring harness for the King fit in, you know.
Did it work?
Well, yeah, I think we, you know, but it just, some, you know, the King Air fuselage was about probably 8 or 10 feet longer than the Queen, so we had to do a lot of coiling up and things like that in the wiring harnesses. I think they thought it was a short-term thing, and so they didn't really set up a special wiring harness for it. But and I don't know how long they made them. But I'm sure that one that John was flying in was one of the ones that I think I was out of the Navy before he joined.
And what was that plane called again?
S-2. It's a
Grumman airframe.
Grumman, okay. Yeah. They were,
and that was a combination of the Queen Air and the King Air.
No. The one that John was flying, I forget what the designation was of it, but one of the pictures that he put on his Facebook page, I'm pretty sure it was one of those beach conglomerations.
Okay. Did you make any friendships in the service that you continued after you got out?
Well, not really. I mean, you know, George and I went in together, and he didn't get into the same schools I did, so we wound up not even seeing each other until after we were both out of the Navy. They're still good friends. He and his wife lived out in western Colorado, and I visited them out there, and then they moved to Nebraska, and I think they're back in the Denver area now.
So did you join any veterans organizations after you came back?
Yeah, VFW and the American Legion. I joined the American Legion first in Hutchinson. I worked for NCR at the time, National Cash Register, and they sent me out to Garden City to a sub office out there, and I went in the VFW and said, "Hey, I'd like to join the VFW." I said, "Oh, you got to be a veteran of a foreign war to be in here." And I said, "Well, I've got 2 tours of Vietnam." "Oh, that ain't war." And so I went down to the Legion, and of course they were needing help, so I joined the Legion there, and then wound up after I'd moved back to Ashland, I joined the VFW here, and bought a life membership and stuff, and I'm a member of the Legion in Dodge too, and the GI Forum in Dodge is another veterans organization.
So your career after you left the military involved electronics all the time?
Yeah.
What did you do here in Ashland when you came back?
Oh, well, my dad was a carpenter, and Uncle Don, they worked together a lot, and Dad had fallen off a ladder, off the roof, and got kind of broken up, and they had a bunch of stuff to finish, and I had remarried in Omaha, a girl that had 3 kids already, And they were really, I mean, the kids were kind of in the wrong neighborhood and all that. And we just decided to come back down here, and I got in the contracting business with Don and worked at that for a while, worked for the city of Ashland as a lineman for a while, did work county weed director for a while. Then I finally got back into a company that sold suite of cash registers that were real strong competitors with NCR. And so I went to work for them and stayed there for all of 10, 12 years. Drove back and forth. We had a little office in Dodge, but it was just a place to put parts. So we didn't really have
Did your time in the military influence how you thought about the war or about the military in general?
Well, I felt like there was no reason to treat enlisted men like they're just in the way or something. That part of it I really hated, but as far as the flying, and I kind of enjoyed just being out, and the two seats behind the pilot and co-pilot were just, we had all the stuff to hunt submarines with back there. Like a big video game in those days, but when we just had a little window about this big beside the fuselage, so we didn't really get to see a whole lot of what we were flying past. But you'd had to look kind of down under the wing, the engine by itself. But
you said that your brother was also in the Navy, but he got to fly.
Yeah,
full time.
Yeah, he retired as a lieutenant commander.
What was your brother's name, please?
Jim.
Jim Baker.
Yeah, Jim Baker. Yeah.
Okay.
He died suddenly a while back, and I still don't know why.
Okay. Do you attend reunions of your shipmates or anything?
No, I. Back in the early 80s, my youngest son was in the Scouts, and John Brunholz, Sr. had been on the USS Yorktown that sunk in the Battle of Midway. Then the ship that I was on was originally supposed to be the Bonhomme Richard, I think. According to some of the plates on down in the engine room and stuff, but they renamed it the Yorktown just so that they could get a Yorktown back out there and make the Japanese think we could build an aircraft carrier in 3 months.
Were they fooled? Were they fooled?
No, no.
Okay.
No, well, I don't. Back then. I've read something somewhere that there was a period of time in World War II when the Enterprise was the only carrier in the whole Pacific that was functional. Everybody else was had damage and was so they would paint different side numbers on the ship. About once a week, they'd change the side numbers. So if the Japanese saw it out there, they'd think there were several.
Okay.
But I don't know how long that went on, but they were. Yeah.
How did your experiences in the military affect your life then?
Like I say, the training was excellent, and I don't really have any, complaint about it, other than basically, I don't know why they treat enlisted men that bad, but they.
You think that's improved?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So, in retrospect, how do you feel about your service during that time?
Oh, it was, I got to see a lot of stuff I would never have seen, and did a lot of traveling. We were on in lots of places that I'd never been. I would never have gone, I guess, to.
Such as?
Well, Japan, Hong Kong, Philippines, Thailand, Hawaii. We were in Hawaii several times, three times on each cruise, because we'd always stop at Pearl on the way home from the Western Pacific. Got to know Hawaii pretty well. We had a couple of guys that came in the squadron just as we were leaving on the second cruise, that had been stationed at Barber's Point on Oahu. When they were servicing the Whiskey Victors, the Dewline, the Super Connie aircraft. That had all the equipment on it to that ray domes and stuff like that for an early warning. They flew from Pearl down to Johnson Island, and then back, and then there was another one that flew up to the Aleutians and then back to Hawaii every day. They had them in the air all the time, and. They figured out that the Air Force's radar up in the Aleutians was picking up stuff that they were flying right past, that they decided they probably didn't need that dew line anymore, early warning line, but anyway, those guys knew Hawaii really well, so they figured out where to go that weren't the touristy type places.
Have you ever been back to Hawaii since your time?
Yeah, took Mom and Dad over there 84, 83 or 84, I think. Took them over. Dad couldn't get around very well, but he could sit on the balcony in the hotel and watch what was going on. Yeah. I got him in a car once and made a trip all the way around the island. Actually, I think it belongs to the Mormon Church, but they have a huge display of Polynesian, just like a big Polynesian colony down there, that was really interesting. I took Mom and Dad to that.
Your family got some benefit too.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Is there anything that I just didn't know to ask you about your time there? Is there anything you'd like people to know?
Oh, no, I don't think. I mean, nothing. No.
It's just that you were already in the service when things blew up.
Yeah.
And did you have an inkling that war was coming?
No, the Cuban Missile Crisis was just over with when I joined. But
so you felt like maybe it was a time of peace when you joined?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, there wasn't. I really hadn't thought about it that much, to be honest.
But were you afraid that you were going to get involved in a full-blown conflict?
No, I don't think so. And we really didn't. We didn't do all the stuff that, you know. There are lots of other veterans down here that that were right out in knee deep swamps, and I don't know how they made it, but yeah.
Some of them did. Some of them didn't. Okay. Well, Jerry, thank you for your service.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Thank you.